Guide you through the afternoon here on Radio 3, which begins in a couple of minutes with a programme from Brighton, a live edition of the Early Music Show. Members of the 16 reflecting on their annual choral pilgrimage, and there's music performed by three early music groups. That's all after a summary of the news this lunchtime. It's read by David Cornett.
The website WikiLeaks has defended its latest release of hundreds of thousands of American files about the war in Iraq. Some of the documents suggest that American military commanders knew of torture, abuse and executions of prisoners by Iraqi forces, but failed to act. At a news conference this morning, the group Iraq Body Count said that, based on the newly published information, it was increasing its estimate of the number of deaths in Iraq since 2003 to 150,000. At a meeting of the G20 group of leading economies, China has signalled that it may be willing to end its policy of keeping its currency artificially weak. China has been under increasing pressure from America to let world markets decide the value of the yuan. The US Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, will hold trade talks with China's vice president tomorrow. Officials in western Afghanistan say a United Nations compound has been attacked by militants. Police say suicide bombers detonated explosives at the entrance to the offices in the city of Herat. Armed men entered the compound and there were exchanges of fire for more than an hour. It's believed that five insurgents were killed. Reports from Haiti suggest that nearly 200 people have died in an outbreak of cholera. Another 2,000 are believed to be unwell. Aid agencies are urgently sending doctors and medical supplies to the affected region north of Port-au-Prince. They hope to prevent the disease reaching the capital's temporary camps, which are home to hundreds of thousands of people following January's earthquake. A nuclear-powered submarine, which spent 10 hours grounded on a shingle bank off the Isle of Skye, is being assessed to see if its rudder has been damaged. HMS Astute was towed free by a tug last night. The weather forecast is for a windy afternoon, particularly in eastern parts, with rain soon clearing eastwards. Many areas should be bright, but with showers, and these showers may be heavy and thundery in southern counties of England. BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
And that was David Cornett. The Schkamper Quartet provides the music in an hour's time here on Radio 3, a second chance to hear our live lunchtime concert from Wigmore Hall in London last Monday. String quartets by Dvorak and Shostakovich on the programme at 2. But now on Radio 3, it's time for the Early Music Show and time to join Lucy Skeeping, who's on the South Coast.
Thanks very much, Ian. Yes, today the Early Music Show comes live from the Brighton Early Music Festival. And the Salis Benny Theatre here at Brighton University has a large and lively audience who are clamouring for all things medieval, Renaissance and Baroque, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, I knew we should have booked a warm-up act. I said, aren't you? Well, that's better. Only joking, they're a great bunch here this morning. Thanks all for coming. Throughout the programme, I'll be talking to the festival's co-artistic directors, Deborah Roberts and Claire Norburn, about what musical delights they've got for us this year. Later on, I'll also be joined by two members of the 16 who stopped off here in Brighton last night as part of their annual choral pilgrimage. And as usual, we'll have live music from three remarkable ensembles of young musicians who are involved in the festival over the coming fortnight. We'll start with some of that music right away. Our first guests are an ensemble from London who call themselves The Artisans, and they've got an intriguing array of instruments lined up in front of us, two viols, a harp, an oud, some percussion, and so on. I'll be introducing the individual members of the band in a minute or two, but first, let's hear them in a ballad from a 14th century manuscript known as the Libre Vermel, or the Red Book of Montserrat. It's called The Seven Joys.
Thank you. Seven Joys, a ballad from the 14th century Catalonian collection of manuscripts called The Red Book of Montserrat. And the performers here at the Salisbury Theatre in Brighton are a young ensemble called The Artisans. We're going to hear more from them in a few moments, but first I want to bring in Claire Norbin and Deborah Roberts, who are the co-directors of the Brighton Early Music Festival. So now it's ninth year, isn't it, Claire? You seem to be going from strength to strength.
We do indeed. I mean, this year has been quite phenomenal for us. The level of interest we've had, both from the public and from the press, has been really unprecedented. And our ticket sales are up by 50% in comparison with last year. And last night we had a fantastic capacity audience of 800 people in St. Bartholomew's Church to hear the 16. So it's all going very well.
Now, every year the Brighton Early Music Festival takes on a different theme, doesn't it? And this year is no exception. Deborah, what's the focus for 2010 and how does it manifest itself?
Well, in one word, ritual. But we're looking at so many different types of rituals that are associated with human activity, from religious right through eating, drinking, love, marriage, death, dying and remembering. So it covers just about everything. And we've even got in some animal rituals as well.
The mind boggles.
Come to the talk.
Well, we're going to hear some more live music from the Artisans now, a piece from one of the most extraordinary collections of music that's come down to us today, from medieval Spain, the Cantigas of Santa Maria. This is an anthology of songs and instrumental dances put together in the 13th century by King Alfonso X of Castile, otherwise known as Alfonso the Wise. And wise, he actually certainly was, an intellectual, a scientist, a linguist, and a philosopher whose ideas on human rights are a lesson to us all. There are more than 400 poems in this collection. They're all written in Galician Portuguese, and they're printed along with musical notation. Many of them tell rather folksy stories about the doings of the Blessed Virgin, and we're going to hear one of them now, but played as an instrumental piece.
Thank you.
piece from the Cantigas of Santa Maria, a collection of religious songs and stories compiled by the 13th century King of Castile, Alfonso the Wise, and performed for us live here at the Brighton Early Music Festival by the Artisans. Emily Askew, Hazel Askew, Alexis Bennett Stewart, Sarah Stewart, and Matthew Robinson. So, Emily and Matthew, you've put your instruments down for a moment so we can have a quick chat. How long have you guys been performing together in this lineup?
The group has been going for about 2 years now, but it's been at this present lineup for the last 8 months. Some of us met through music college and others through the folk music scene.
I thought as much, because you definitely have a sort of folksy feel, perhaps that's the right word. You've certainly got some interesting textures in the band's sound. I mean, I love that combination of wheezing bowed instruments with plucked instruments at the same time. Tell us a little about the instruments that you use in your concerts.
Well, we use an array of instruments from mainly the 13th and 14th century. So it kind of depends on what repertoire we're playing. When we're playing Iberian medieval music, we play the repertoire, play with the instruments that we have today. So I play the oud, which is the precursor to the European lute, and it's a kind of fretless lute. And then Sarah is playing some Arabian-inspired percussion instruments, such as the darabuka, which is a small pottery hourglass-shaped drum with a fish skin, and also a bendir, which is a round frame drum with a goat skin. And then Emily and Alexis are both playing medieval viols.
Yeah, the medieval form of violin, and the style of violin we've got today has five strings, an extra one off of the fingerboard, which we can either bow at the same time or pluck with our thumbs. And the bridge is slightly flatter, so we can play two or three strings at the same time. And Hazel's playing a medieval style harp, which hasn't got any levers or pedals, and is tuned diatonically with 23 strings.
And it's a lot smaller, of course, than the sort of huge concert harp you see in the orchestra pits in operas, isn't it? She's got it on her lap.
Yes.
What I find quite interesting is the way you highlight that connection between sort of the Arab, Middle Eastern music and what we might call the European or Western style of music. There is that sort of connection somewhere, isn't there?
Yes, definitely. I think that comes from just our understanding of the history. So we've looked back and seen the occupation of Iberia by the Moors and decided that after looking at some of the evidence, such as the Cantigas de Santa Maria, that instruments such as the oud, which are seen in pictures in the Cantigas, and the percussion instruments would really suit our group really well.
Now, you're performing again here in Brighton on the 3rd of November. So what are you going to do that evening?
Well, we've taken the Brighton Early Music Festival's idea of ritual, and we've decided to take ourselves on a medieval pilgrimage. And we've called our concert O Camino de Santiago, which is the path to Santiago. And we're going to the Santiago de Compostela Cathedral in the northeast of Spain. And then on a second pilgrimage in the second half, to the Montserrat Monastery with a few Cantigas de Santa Maria thrown in along the way.
Actually, I once went to Montserrat Monastery and it was terribly exciting until I realised you had to take a very tiny little train up the side of a mountain. It all got rather scary. Once I was there, it was brilliant. Anyway, thanks very much, Matthew. I hope it goes brilliantly, which I'm sure it will. And you're going to perform one more piece for us now, aren't you? Emily, you introduce it. I know it's from the Libra Vermelligan, isn't it?
Yes, it's called Cunctissimus Concanentes and is about the Annunciation. And it has a lovely chorus which translates as, "Let us sing together, Hail Mary."
Ave Maria, clara passi e che dici, Ave Maria, cantissimus concadentes, Ave Maria, cantissimus concadentes, Ave Maria, clara passi e che dici, taurite carissimi, Tara passi e che ti scitali te carissimi, en concipi es Maria, Ave Maria, en concipi es Maria, Ave Maria.
Sentissimus congamentes, Ave Maria.
Sentissimus congamentes, Ave Maria.
En concipi es Maria, haudi te carissimi, en concipi es Maria, haudi te carissimi. Pariesque filium, Ave Maria, pariesque filium, Ave Maria.
Contissimus concadentes, Ave Maria, contissimus concadentes, Ave Maria.
Pariesque filium, audite carissimi, pariesque filium, audite carissimi. Vocca vise iuterum, Ave Maria, vocca vise. Ave Maria,
sentissimus concadentes, Ave Maria, sentissimus concadentes, Ave Maria.
Sacred music from the Libra Vermel, the medieval manuscript of the monastery of Montserrat near Barcelona, performed there for us at the Brighton Early Music Festival by the Artisans. Well, there'll be more live music later in the programme, but now I'm joined by two members of one of the UK's most successful vocal ensembles, who are certainly no strangers to the early music show, The 16. Every year they embark on a lengthy choral pilgrimage, which takes them to some of the country's best concert halls and most beautiful places of worship. In fact, since February, they've performed their programme of Tudor music for ceremony and devotion in no fewer than 25 different venues, from Greyfriars Kirk in Edinburgh all the way down to Tewkesbury Abbey. Last night, though, their tour bus rolled in round here in Brighton to St. Bartholomew's Church. And choir members, Sally Dunkley and Eamon Dugan, who's also the assistant conductor of the choir, are with me now. Eamon, this choral pilgrimage seems like one large musical marathon. Just how many years have you been doing it? Have your family kind of forgotten you? Will they recognise you ever again?
It hasn't quite got that extreme yet. This is actually the 10th anniversary of the choral pilgrimage. It started off in 2000 as originally a one-off project to mark the millennium, relatively small scale with only a few performances, but the response to it was so good that the group realised that they didn't just have to struggle trying to find audiences in London, but there was definitely a demand for this music throughout the country. So we decided to expand it and to keep it going, and it's just grown year on year. And the audiences continue to get bigger, and each year we try to add on new venues. So we've done 25 performances this year up and down the country, as you've said, Lucy. Next year we're upping it to, I think it's 30 performances. We have the benefit of performing in all these wonderful, wonderful cathedrals.
Sally, I guess you've got more to do than almost anyone when it comes to the pilgrimage, because not only are you a regular singer with the 16, but I gather you're also kept busy behind the scenes researching and editing the music. What does that involve exactly?
Well, I was delighted when Harry Christophers invited me a year ago to work on this present programme, because 16th century English sacred vocal music has always been my particular interest, the area that I've specialised in, both as singer and editor and various other things. But there's a surprisingly large amount of preparation that needs to be done before we start singing the music, not only choosing the right pieces in sequence, but in fact, still, not all the music is available in good performing editions. And it's always interesting anyway to look at the original sources. I have checked every note for many of the pieces in this programme. In the case of Bird, that means looking at his published, printed edition of the Canciones Sacre, which is a wonderful experience. One always learns something new from looking at the details. Then after that, I'm thinking about how best to present the music on the page to make the edition user-friendly for the singers, where to put the bar lines, things like that, and about putting in the translation above the introduction of each phrase so that we all know exactly what it is we're singing about. So it's quite a big job.
There is something really special about seeing the actual music, you know, the piece, the manuscript itself. It's so different from seeing a facsimile, isn't it? It's quite magical.
Yes, of course. It's a great privilege, of course, to look even at a microfilm, yes.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, and you did as well, this year's choral pilgrimage focuses on ceremonial and devotional music from the Tudor period. So tell us briefly a little more about the programme and how did you decide on that particular theme? Because the Tudors are big news. All the kids learn about them at school and they always seem to be on the telly, don't they, as well?
Indeed. Well, there are two cornerstones to this programme. Harry decided he wanted to include John Shepherd's great antiphon Media Vita in Morte Sumus and William Byrd's motet in Felix Ego. So those are both very substantial and most wonderful works, which I feel take us all on a real emotional journey as well as a musical one in concert. For me, one of the most interesting things about performing this programme many times has been to think about how much musical thinking changed in the 50-odd years spanned by this programme. So we are moving from Shepherd and the Young Tallis, who were writing ritual music for the Catholic liturgy based on plain chant, to a freely composed piece like Byrd's in Felix Ego, which belongs in a devotional context, written for his fellow recusant Catholics in Elizabethan England.
Well, luckily for us, that music has already been committed to disc, so we can enjoy one of the four works by William Byrd right now. This is Laudibus in Sanctis, in sacred praises, celebrate the Most High Lord, and let the heavens proclaim the glorious works of God.
Thank you.
William Byrd's motet Laudibus in Sanctis, performed by the 16, conducted by Harry Christophers. This is the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're broadcasting live today from the Salis Beni Theatre at Brighton University as part of this year's Brighton Early Music Festival. Now, the 16 performed here in Brighton last night as part of their almost countrywide choral pilgrimage. Eamon, how many performances have you got left on the tour?
Just the one. So you've caught us right at the tail end. We certainly clock up a lot of miles over the course of the year. 25 performances this year, as I mentioned. They're spread out over the space of about 9 months and normally grouped in twos or threes, often but not always geographically close together, so as to cut down on some of the travelling. But we do get around.
And you must all get on pretty well as well, if you're sitting on a tour bus for a few hours, or perhaps you will make your own way.
Yeah, we don't actually have a tour bus. It's a sort of metaphorical one. but we do get on. There's a remarkably good camaraderie within the group. I think it's one of the real strengths of the ensemble. As you say, we spend a lot of time together, but there's never any dissension among the ranks. We're all good friends, good colleagues, and everyone's there supporting each other. And it really is a very happy bus to be on.
Where do you go then for your final performance?
Our final performance is in the chapel of Tonbridge School, which I believe is sold out, but it might be worth calling just in case you want to check.
Little plug there. And are you allowed to tell us what's in store for 2011, or is that top secret information?
Next year marks the 400th anniversary of the death of the Spanish composer Tomás Luis de Victoria, so we will be marking that celebration with our programme, and we'll be seeing the programme for the first time as it happens this Monday morning, because we need to get the CD ready for the beginning of next season.
You can never start rehearsing too soon. Well, Eamon Dugan and Sally Dunkley, members of the 16, many thanks for joining, for coming to talk to us this afternoon, and all the best for this final leg of your journey in Tunbridge next weekend. Meanwhile, we have more live music now in the form of a group of four graduates from the Royal College of Music who call themselves Ensemble Amaranthos. I'm going to have a chat with them shortly, but first, let's hear them play a movement from one of Telemann's Paris quartets.
Thank you.
A movement from Telemann's Paris Quartet No. 12 in E minor, played for us live by Ensemble Amaranthos. Now, I'm told that the four members of the group all come from different countries, so let's find out a bit more about them. Perhaps Claire Bradshaw, the gamba player in the group, could do some introductions for us. Claire, where are you from, first of all? And by the way, please lend me that lovely purple jacket at the end of the program. I'll definitely have one of those. Where do you come from?
Well, I'm half Australian and half English, and our baroque flute player, Marta Gonçalves, is Portuguese. Our Portuguese violinist, Sara de Boer Strons, and our harpsichord player, Eric Dipenaar, is from South Africa. And we have a fifth member who couldn't make it today, and that's baroque cellist, Elektra Miliadou, who is from Greece.
And you all met at the Royal College of Music?
Yes, we did. We met in 2007 when we were all in our final year of studying there. And being five very good friends who just happened to have the perfect instrumentation for the Telemann Paris Quartets, we set about the task of learning and performing all 12 of them.
Well, certainly all the best groups start off with the members being friends. I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've actually been playing together how long?
3 years now.
3 years. Tell us about the name, by the way, Ensemble Amaranthos. It sounds a little to me like a wonderful liqueur.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because we did come up with the name when we were in the pub having a drink after rehearsal one day.
And I didn't think musicians did anything like that.
But Amaranthos, it's Greek for the unwilting or the unfading, and it's also the name of a type of beautiful fuchsia-coloured flower.
Oh, that's nice. Now, Eric, as a group, you're involved in the Brighton Early Music Festival's Young Artists Scheme.
Yes.
What is that and what does it involve for you?
Well, we are taken onto the scheme, and in terms of what it meant to us, it gave us very much practical assistance in terms of promoting ourselves, getting appropriate publicity material ready, and getting experience in outreach programs. But above all, it gave us the opportunity to perform in a respected early music festival. And that's invaluable for every young group, I think.
Well, some more live music from you now. What are you going to play for us? He's just moved away from the mic. Quick, tell us.
I'm back.
We're all here. What are you going to play?
We'll be playing the last movement from the 12th Paris Quartet in E minor, the Chaconne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chaconne by Telemann from one of his 1738 Paris quartets. It was played for us live here in Brighton by four members of Ensemble Amaranthos. We'll have more live music to end today's early music show, but in the meantime, I'm joined again by Deborah Roberts and Claire Norbon. Tell us a little more about what the festival has in store over the next couple of weeks. Deborah, perhaps you'd like to give us a quick rundown.
Well, we've got quite a few concerts coming up. We'll be starting, well, tonight we have a concert on weddings. We've got four weddings and a funeral. From then on, we'll be going to be quite an array of different rituals, really.
So quite a sort of mixture of things. Claire, for a moment, let's talk about the festival's support for up-and-coming young musicians, which I know is an important part of your work. It's the young artist scheme that you run. You call it Brempf Live. How does it work?
Well, we select ensembles by auditions. We did 5 days of auditions, and we have six ensembles that we selected from that. We had 24 ensembles in total. And what we do is it's not just about concert opportunities. As Eric was saying, they have opportunities to go into schools, and we support them with that. But we also help them with making connections with promoters and giving them broadcast opportunities. So the groups we have today, all three of them, were actually on the scheme 2 years ago, but we're continuing our support by continuing to give them broadcast opportunities and to champion their work to other promoters.
Yeah, that's one of the important things, isn't it? Because you can give people a push at first, but Now, I know one of the events that you two particularly look forward to each year is something called the White Night, which does sound intriguing. What exactly is it? It's nothing to do with Halloween, is it?
It's not, no. It's actually the day before. It's an all-night cultural festival. It's a concept that started in France, and it's this third year that we've done it in Brighton. It's not just our festival. It happens all over the city, and there are many free events that are happening so that you can go to the pavilion late at night, you can go and have a swim. As far as what we're doing is the six ensembles we've had on the scheme, they are going to be performing St. Bartholomew's Church, and the audience can come and they can move around the performances. There'll be no seats.
Great. Well, I think we should hear a couple more items now. Deborah, perhaps you'd like to introduce them.
Well, in fact,
just one piece, I think.
Yes,
we've got time
going
for.
To be from the concert that I'm just going to dash off to a rehearsal for in a minute. This is Vezzosi Augelli by Jacques Tivet, who was a great influence on Monteverdi, in fact. This is a beautiful little piece about a dialogue in nature between rustling leaves and birdsong.
She's there.
delightful birds among the green branches, Musica Secreta, with a song by Jacques de Vert. And they'll be singing that and more live tonight at St George's Church in Kemp Town as part of the Brighton Early Music Festival. Claire Norburn, we're actually recording two of your events for Radio 3. Tell us a little about those.
Yes, we've got Passacaglia, who are trying to, we're basically trying to recreate the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens in St George's Church, which would be quite a challenge, and also celebrating the 300th anniversary of Arne. And then we've also got Emma Kirkby joining forces with a fantastic young chamber ensemble, international Baroque players, and they're all 20-something, and I think they're really going places, and this is a fantastic opportunity for them, their first proper broadcast.
Well, I promised more live music before the end of the programme, and we're now joined on stage by four ladies brandishing recorders who are known collectively as I Flautisti. I'm going to invite them over to have a chat in a moment or two, but let's hear them in action now in a saraband by Heinrich Bieber. Music by Heinrich Bieber, played by I Flautisti. Danielle, perhaps you'd like to introduce yourself and your colleagues to the listening public.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are I Flautisti, the London Recorder Quartet, made up of my colleagues Jitka, Ilona, Anna and myself.
Now tell us a little about the repertoire you play. Is it just things that are written for recorders already, or do you do clever arrangements?
Well, in short, no. Obviously, a lot of our original repertoire stems from the Renaissance and the Baroque, and so that maintains a focal and very central point to a lot of our programming. But what's interesting and quite surprising for some is that despite having composed music for Recorder Consort throughout those periods, the total number of 20th and 21st century compositions for our instrument is considerably larger. So it's important for I Flautisti then to showcase these too, to continually encourage the growth of repertoire for the recorder and to rise up to the challenge of doing so.
Nice to know that people are still writing sort of contemporary music then, yes, for the recorder. Now, I know your showcase concert here in Brighton is tomorrow afternoon at St Andrews, and I think you've got a bit of a Four Seasons theme going on, haven't
Indeed you? Indeed we do. And who better to associate our concert with than the flame-haired king of the recorder concerto himself, Antonio Vivaldi. So the theme of Brempf this year is ritual. And so when coming up with the idea of what we would like to programme, we began to think of the time of year that the festival takes place and harvest and seasons and so on.
Well, we're going to hear you in some Vivaldi now. What are you going to perform for us?
We'll be playing the Largo and Allegro Molto from his Concerto in C Major for recorder.
Lovely. Let's hear it.
Thank you.
two movements there from a concerto in C by Vivaldi, stylishly played there by the recorders of I Flautisti, the girls aloud of Baroque music. And that brings to an end a very packed early music show from here at the Salis Benny Theatre in Brighton. My thanks to all the guests in the programme, Deborah Roberts and Claire Norman, Eamon Dugan and Sally Dunkley from the 16, and of course all the musicians from Ensemble Amaranthos, the Artisans and I Flautisti. On tomorrow's early music show, Catherine Bott looks at some of the music and composers to emerge from the Italian city of Naples, so I hope you can tune in for that. For now, though, I'm going to hand you back to Ian Skelly in Broadcasting House in London.
Lucy, thank you very much indeed. Today's early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and it was produced by Les Pratt. Well, from this lunchtime in Brighton, let me now take you back to last Monday's lunchtime and the concert that came live from Wigmore Hall in London. It's introduced by Katie Derham.
A very warm welcome to London's Wigmore Hall for a recital today by one of the very finest Czech string quartets, the Schamper Quartet. It is, in fact, packed in here. It is a sellout recital. There was a waiting list this morning. I tell you, the excitement is running high. They are, of course, wonderful musicians. They're also great teachers. The Schamper Quartet were mentored by the world-famous Smetana Quartet. And if you were doing a chamber music family tree, you would be able to trace their roots back to the very earliest Czech ensembles. And the Czech Republic is a country that is the cradle of European chamber music. They are familiar names here at Wigmore Hall. They were its first ever resident artists. And as they told me earlier, like so many musicians, they love it here for the acoustic and for the audience. Well, later today, we're going to hear them play their countryman Dvořák's string quartet in G, which the players described to me as a delicious main course this lunchtime. But when they were searching for a starter, they chose Shostakovich, his number 11 in F minor. Now, to understand this piece, you have really got to understand the composer's relationship with a group of musicians who became his muses, if you like, the Beethoven Quartet. Now, they were a particularly fine group who came to prominence in the late 1920s with their performances of Beethoven, but who, in 1940, started to work with and greatly inspire Shostakovich. He'd started to write string quartets already, partly to keep a low profile while he was out of favour with Stalin. But from the second quartet onwards, most of them can be linked closely to this group, the Beethoven Quartet. Now, why am I telling you all this today? Well, in 1965, the second violinist, Vasily Sharinsky, died. And Shostakovich wrote this 11th quartet in his memory. He considered Vasily a dear friend as well as a colleague. But despite that motivation, it's not too solemn a work. There's a feeling of elegy. There is a sense of loss, perhaps, and there are some tense moments. And perhaps the most telling feature is the lone voice recalling his late friend, which begins the opening section. It's quite a whimsical piece. It's quite odd, even in places. It's in seven short movements, and the usual, not the usual four. And as you can hear, the quartet are coming onto the stage now. It's a piece that tells a real story. Hear it now. Let me just introduce the quartet: Helena Yerevskaya, Daniela Shushkova, Radim Zadimbubsky, and Lukasz Polak.